Imagine you live your entire life in a completely black void of nothing. So you wake up in the morning and it's just you in the bed, and then you get out of bed and you walk towards your coffee maker. The bed disappears. It's just you and the coffee maker. Then a cup appears. You pour yourself a cup of steaming hot coffee, and then you walk into your office, sit down at your computer. The coffee maker disappears, and it's just you, the computer, and a coffee cup in the desk. And then you drive to work in a car, and it's just the car in total blackness. And then you arrive at work and you go sit down at your work desk, and that's the only thing there. There's nothing else. No sounds, no background, anything. It's just you and the computer and I guess your coffee cup. And that's your whole life. No background, anything. If someone comes to talk to you, they appear, speak, and then vanish. Mm-hmm. How much do you think your life would change? How different would that be with no background, anything? If it's not immediately important to you right then, it's completely disappeared. How much would that change everything?
That is an interesting hypothetical.
I don't know the answer to it. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I was going to say I might get less distracted. You know, maybe there's an upside that I'm always focused on what's in front of me. But the things that I get distracted by aren't usually from the environment. They're from, you know, my computer, my phone. So I don't know if it really solves that problem. In fact, most of the time when I stop and look out the window and see a bird or look at a tree, that's a calming moment that helps me. That's not something I would want to avoid.
Well, I mean, not even talking about distractions. I mean, all the wonderful things that are in the background, like a bird in a tree, out the window, whatever. All of those things. How much does the entire world and environment play into our overall feelings and focus and happiness and just the overall feelings of what we do, you know? How much difference does a morning make versus the night? Or how much difference does a coffee shop make versus your bedroom or, you know, et cetera? I mean, how much does the outside world affect how you feel and how you do things?
I don't know how seriously you want to take that question, because there's a lot of things that come to mind.
It's more just hypothetical. I think that's sort of what we want to talk about. But maybe a good place to start is you told me this story last week. Of how you went and revisited your old college campus, and it got you thinking about some of this stuff. So why don't you tell that story?
Okay, yeah. All right. That's a good place to start. And that is what prompted this podcast. So I went with our cousin Ryan to the University of Central Florida, kind of convinced him to let me tag along for a day at school. And for the most part, he kind of went off and did his thing and had lots of classes, and I just had the day to wander the campus. UCF is, at least when I was there, the biggest school in the country. I don't know if it still is, but if it's not, it's like right up there. It's a massive campus. I was there for 5 years because I, you know, took a long path to graduation, and I basically lived there. I would wake up, drive my car to campus. You'd have to get there really early because parking was an existential nightmare. I'd park and I'd just be there until night, and then I would leave. That was pretty much my typical day. So it was like a place that I lived, but I haven't been back in forever. So I went along with Ryan, got to hang out there all day. And it was a really interesting and kind of amazing experience to me. Of course, there's a lot of nostalgia, you know, seeing all the places that you used to be, although they've changed so much. The place is under construction. Just the joke is that UCF is under construction forever. But it's just a lot was different. So there was a nostalgia factor, but just being there all day made me think about how much I loved being there. And when I think back to what I loved about school, you know, there was a few friends that I made, and in a few cases I'm still in contact with, and that was great. That was a great part of my experience. I had a few professors that I liked, but really the thing that I just loved about it, the thing that I missed the most about being in school, was being there, like the actual physical campus. And so I sat there, went into the library, which is this massive 5-story experience, went to one of the coffee shops, got some coffee, sat down, did some journaling, tried to just reflect a little bit about like, what was I feeling? Why was this place so compelling to me? What was it about it that was so compelling? And again, I didn't run into anyone I knew. It was just the physical place, just being there and the people around and the buildings that I was in and everything. And I don't know that I 100% know. It's something I kind of want to talk about today, but that's at least the segue into the podcast, which is, what is it about certain physical spaces that is so compelling? I mean, it's not just nice things to look at. It was emotional for me. Again, there's a little bit of nostalgia in there, but beyond that, it really changed the way I felt. It changed what I wanted to do. It made me want to change priorities or focus more on things that I wasn't thinking about the day before. And maybe a similar experience that I know at least some people have is just spending a while in a bookstore. A lot of people that I've talked to will say this, like, man, when I go into a bookstore and I just hang out, I feel like I want to read more. I feel like I want to study more. I feel like I want to be a better person. There's just something about being in there that is inspiring. And that, in my case, on a grander scale for that day, that's kind of the feeling that I got. Is that something you experience ever? Bookstore, maybe, in particular?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've probably told you about this, but I think I've mentioned it on here before, but I went to this music camp for 2 weeks in high school. It was at University of Miami. It was a music composers camp, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. I mean, you're just there on campus for 2 weeks learning all types of things and meeting all kinds of people. And when I think of some of the most inspiring times in my life, that is definitely one of them. And yeah, it just had this atmosphere of learning and pushing yourself and trying things and hope, and everyone there wanted to be great and loved music, and every conversation you had was about music and how much it was a life-changing experience. And I've always wanted to be a part of something like that again. Now, surely if I had stayed there for a couple years, maybe that would have changed. It was only 2 weeks. But the feeling I got from that was just something I never really experienced before. And there's a couple different things that probably factor into that, both for you and for something like that for me. And I've had similar experiences, though maybe not quite to that level before in different places. But there's so much that goes into it. One is that everyone, everywhere you look, everyone is sort of on the same mission. I mean, it goes in different directions, but you're all there to become better. None of you have to be there, unless somebody's rich parents are forcing them to be there. You don't have to be there. Everyone wants to be there, though it might be a challenge. You all stay there because you actually want to be there. And so you relate to everyone almost instantly. Everywhere you look, you relate to them. So I think that's part of it. Also, you relate to everyone because you're all learning the same topics. So if you have trouble with something, you just talk to somebody else about it. So there's this common interest in everyone, which is not something you find really anywhere else. Even in a bookstore, I mean, everyone's looking at books, but everyone has completely different interests and they're kind of all over the place. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think played into it for you?
Yeah. Well, so first, I think that was one of the first things that I really felt was the fact that everyone around you is working really hard on something. You know, I'm sitting, you know, I'm just kind of journaling and being a weirdo, but the people around me are working on calculus and they're like complaining to each other about how awful calculus is and how difficult it is. And they kind of, you know, complain a little bit and then start doing the work, and then they stop and complain a little bit more and do the work. And I know that sounds silly, but it's inspiring. Like, it was just everyone in the building, thousands of people in this building are just kind of doing the same thing. They're all there to work really hard and struggle with some very challenging study and classes and work that they're doing. But everybody's there doing the same thing and suffering in the same way and striving towards the same thing. And something about that is so comforting to me. Like, if I'm going to go somewhere and I'm going to do that and I'm just surrounded by other people doing the same thing, I love that feeling. That to me is just so different than sitting in your room at your desk in the corner, just kind of doing your own thing. You feel so alone and that you just feel like you're kind of quietly suffering by yourself. So that would probably be the number one thing, is just so many people who are just aligned in the same way. Everyone is striving towards the same thing, and something about that communal feeling is amazing. There's a lot more that goes on too, though, in part, even outside of the people there, the physical space is something I think is just hugely important.
Well, another thing about a big campus like that is that, never really thought about this before until we started talking in the coffee episode about how there's these different expectations from different places. If you go to a restaurant, you are welcome there until you finish your food. And then it's sort of, okay, well, we'll get your check. Yeah. And then you can sit there a little longer, but really they want you to get the hell out of there because it's time to go. And so a lot of places that you go to, you're not really supposed to stay. You're supposed to come, give the money, and then go away. And then you're not really welcome anymore. Something like a campus, especially a college campus, is that it mostly doesn't close. Really, it's kind of, I think it's open all night, or most things are. Mm-hmm. And you're meant to just be there and hang out and do whatever you want to do. And there's this sense of exploration where you can just explore the library, explore the other buildings, you know, go anywhere you want, sit on the steps, sit near the lake, you do whatever, and there's no cops coming around like, what are you doing here? There's nobody's watching you. You are just there, and you're trusted, and you trust all the other people there, and it's this welcoming open space, and you can just explore and be yourself and relax. And that is so rare in the rest of the world. There's really not much like that.
Yeah, that stood out to me too. So, fun fact, I think this was my sophomore year when I was there. Somebody got in trouble because they were living in the library, and they lived there, I think, for like 6 months or something before somebody was like, no, this can't just be your house. But they got away with it for like 6 months, which is pretty amazing and speaks to how much it is like that, where you can just exist in this place. Thought about that too, not even connected to this conversation, but I was thinking about how we have this idea of third place, you know, somewhere you can go and be that isn't home and isn't work. And for me, I do a lot of coffee shops and I love them, but it's not that experience. You know, you go to a coffee shop, you find your spot, you buy your drink, you sit there for a while, maybe you buy another drink, and then you're kind of done. Once you get up and leave, you can't really just go back in. You would have to probably buy another drink and resituate. And, you know, it's kind of a bought experience. They expect you to be buying drinks, which, you know, again, totally fine. And I love it. But, you know, the college campus is like a city where you can just go be anywhere you want. I would say an airport is kind of like that. And it can have that. It depends on the airport. I like the PDX airport quite a bit. Some airports are a little less fun, but it has a little bit of that same feeling where once you're there, nobody's going to hassle you. If you're just, you could go sleep on the floor, nobody cares. That's like a normal thing to do because you went through security, you've got a flight somewhere, it might be in 30 minutes, it might be in 7 hours, who knows, whatever, right? So you kind of get that experience there. A mall is kind of the only other thing I can really think of, or you can go to a mall and just hang out and do whatever. And, you know, a mall is not the most wonderful place, in my opinion, but there's not really much else. Almost anything else, you're going to a single place and you're having to spend money to do a particular thing. and you can stay there for a while and you have to leave. You know, you might go to a bowling alley and bowl, but then you're done. There's not really anywhere else that you could just go live.
I mean, there's parks and stuff, which
yes,
depending on the park, there's a lot of different ones. But I used to go to malls and bring my sketchbook or journal or whatever, and I would hang out there all day,
yeah,
by myself, and get coffee and go explore places, and I would have that sense of adventure a little bit, mm-hmm. and you know, go to the bookstore and hang out in there too, and I also get that similar feeling in airports as well. The first time I flew to visit you, I remember I was at the airport like 3 hours early or something. I brought my sketchbook and you just kind of hanging out, getting coffee and food and whatever. And you just sort of walk around and explore. And it's a really nice feeling. And yeah, it's something you don't get a lot of places. But what else is there? And how do you create this for yourself? Or how do you find these things? Or like, what are the important aspects of it that you... And it's not just this feeling that we're after. We're sort of after any environmental good thing that makes you feel good or gives you the right type of energy, I guess.
Okay, well, there's something I really want to talk about. And I think that I want you to talk about it, actually, because you probably know a lot more about this. You definitely know a lot more about this than I do. Lighting is such... maybe the most important part, or at least one of the most important things about a physical space that makes it feel comfortable and inviting. And it's, for me, a little bit hard to nail down exactly what the differences are, but I know that it makes a difference because I can just feel it almost as soon as I walk in. So a quick example, I think this was yesterday, actually. I went shopping with my wife and a friend, and we were just kind of doing some random Christmas shopping in little shops. So we walk into this one store, I forget the name. It's relatively small. They just sell crap, like, I don't know.
Okay.
Stuff, cards, books, things you put on a shelf, whatever. Just crap. And the store, I mean, it's a nice store. No complaints, but... you know, it's night, so there's no natural light coming in. It's just the artificial lights. And it's hard to say exactly why, but it just doesn't feel that great. I think I have some things in my head that might account for it. It has a bunch of overhead lights that are lighting everything. They're very blue, very cold lights, which it's evening time. So to me, that's a little bit offensive. You know, I would expect something warmer that corresponds more with mellow evening sunset time, not that bright, energetic daytime. So that was a little incongruous. The lights are pointed kind of down. They have, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a recessed light. It's a light that's fairly exposed. You know, the bulb is sort of part shaded, maybe an inch of actual glowing bulb and the sort of flat surface of the bulb. You know, it's kind of cone-shaped. But you can see, like, a lot of the light is hitting your eye directly from these lights. So you walk in and there's a little bit of this feeling of like, there's kind of light shining in my eyes. And they're fairly close to the wall. So you get this very bright area at the top of the wall where things are being displayed. And then it's sort of dark at the bottom. And because it's so close, I think, and they're somewhat spaced out, there's these sort of sharp shadows that form. So that's this store, and you know, it's nothing is like, oh, this is awful, but you just walk in, you're like, this isn't that cozy. So we shop there, and then we go to a store called Tender Loving Empire. I don't know how many of these there are. I think it's a chain. Basically, this is a store that you would go to if you like want to spend $20 on a bar of soap. And they clearly put a lot of effort into creating an environment that makes you think it's okay to spend $20 on a bar of soap, because you go in there and you're like, man, this is nice. The first thing my wife said was, it smells good in here. You're just, this whole environment is very carefully crafted to do this, but it's a very similar store to where we just were. It's got a bunch of crap on the walls, on shelves and things, but you're like, man, this is nice. Holy crap. And I'm trying to think about it. This is 10 minutes apart. It's still dark outside. There's no natural light. It's also lit by overhead lights. You know, it's kind of the same setup, but it just feels so much better. So the overhead lights, they had somewhat similar overhead lights, but they're all like, there's less bulb exposed and they're all much more carefully tilted away from you so that you aren't really getting that sharp light in your eyes. They're much farther away from whatever it is they're targeting, and they're better targeted on the thing. So you might have this, you know, shelf full of books and items and whatnot, and the light is pointed at it, but it's farther away, and it's centered to where it gives this nice glow of light across the entire thing. You don't have, like, the top part of it really bright and the bottom part really dark. And because of the distance, you don't get the harsher shadows. You have a lot more light sources being casted onto the thing, so you're not getting these sharp shadows. And you get this much more diffuse thing where it's not this bright spot in the middle. And then any light that was exposed to you that you could see directly was very diffused and relatively dim. You know, they have this big kind of glowy bulb light. And I think this is intentional. They are exposing light to you directly, but it's very toned down and it's very diffused. So it's this nice, comfortable thing that you're very happy to look at. And then on the back wall, it was this neon sign. It was some awful markety slogan like, "You're our family too. We're blood related by our, well, I don't know." Something super cheesy and like way too intimate. But it's this kind of orangey red neon sign put across the back. It's not super bright, so it's not hard to look at all. But it creates this beautiful, almost cyberpunk reddish glow across this wall. So you see this back room and it's bright. It's light, but it has just this reddish tinge to it that's coming off of this this neon sign with this beautiful gradient of red kind of near the sign. And as it, you know, it gets softer as it comes out and just washes through the room really beautifully. And the whole effect is just amazing. You know, it's a beautiful space. It's a very comfortable space. Again, it's stupid expensive. I found a tube of chapstick for $16 just as another example. But it's beautiful. And so those are my observations about lighting. To me, though, lighting is one of those things that we all have a lot of control over, even in our own homes. So I would love to understand it as best I can, because it appears to make such a difference, even just between these two stores. So what are your thoughts on lighting? You are literally a concept artist. You've said that it's basically your job to design spaces that people will like, at least in concept. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, I don't know a whole lot about lights. You know, I don't know all my light bulbs and know a whole lot about lights themselves. I also do not design interior lighting exactly. I give concepts for it, so I can make a scene look really good. And then I let somebody else figure out how to match my art. So it's not like I have some super deep understanding of how to actually light stuff. But the theory of light.
Yeah, give us that.
And how it works. I know something. I can't just explain light. But a couple things that I have been thinking about. If you think of something as extremely complicated as light and all the different lighting scenarios in your world and all the different arrangements it could be, all the different stores completely lit differently. And, you know, the difference between a coffee shop lighting and a bar and a mall and all that and a concert venue or whatever. I mean, there's so much. But if you kind of think about it in primitive terms and go way back, and think, like, what are the most basic lighting scenarios that primitive humans would encounter?
Yeah.
And still, it's sort of infinite. But you have things like sunrise and midday on a sunny day. And then you have sunset and you have overcast. You have an open field where there's just sort of direct lighting everywhere. And then you have the interior of a forest, right? Where you have all these cast shadows everywhere and the light is cut up in all different ways. And then you have sort of the interior firelight in a cave or something, you know, like there's not that many scenarios. Of course, you have different weathers that cause different lightings. But it's much simpler if you think about it in that sense. And when you think about people lighting their homes, most of the time what they're after is the feel of natural light, right? So you get people that brag about, you know, $1,000 light bulb that has the perfect color temperature as the sun, and they're just so proud of it. But it cannot ever compete with a skylight in terms of naturalism. Like, there is nothing more natural than the sun itself. You just can't do it. Even if you get a perfect color temperature match to the sun. And the reason, one of the reasons why that is that the difference between the sun shining down outside and a light that is the perfect color temperature match to the sun is that outside there is not one light source. There is not just the sun. Mm-hmm. As soon as something blocks the sun and casts a shadow, that shadow is not pitch black. In theory, in space, if there were no stars, no planets, no nothing, okay, total blackness, if you were to block the sun, the cast shadow of that would be black. So on Earth, you get a lot of that reflected light, okay, dispersed light from the sun. One, of course, is the sky. That's very cool and bluish. But you also get it from clouds. You also get it from buildings that are nearby, whatever. You get a lot of reflected light going on. So the shadows cast on the Earth are much, much lighter than something like the moon, or somewhere where it doesn't have an atmosphere. So when you try, and that is such a big part of our visual perception, the slight warm tone of the sun, which is actually completely white, in midday, it feels warm because the shadows are cool. The warm to cool balance in natural, like outside light, is so ingrained in our perception, we don't even recognize it or understand it half the time or appreciate it. But it's such an important part of how we perceive things.
Sorry, you're saying so if a person is standing outside midday, sun is bright, no clouds, you're saying their shadow will be warmer than the area around them that is cooler, that's being directly lit?
No, if you're being lit by a slightly warm sunlight, their shadow will be cool and bluish because it's being lit by the blue sky on a normal scenario. They're so naturally inclined, without even knowing it, to always differentiate or to sense a warmness and a coolness in light and shadow. And really really any single lighting scenario, one light is slightly warmer or cooler than the other. So a light side of something will either be warmer or cooler than the dark side of it, or the other side of it that's not being lit by the same light source. So when you have a room that is lit completely by one light that's perfectly tuned to the sun, let's say it's this perfect sun-balanced light, you know, exact warm tone as the sun or whatever, it still won't feel like sunlight outside because there is no other fill light. There's no slightly bluish tinted fill light from the rest of the world. There's just one single light source. And so you get this, it might still be very pretty, but it will never quite be the same as sunlight outside because the rest of the light, everything that happens in the shadows of that room, do not match up to outside light. And it is almost an impossible thing to do, to light an interior room that feels like natural outdoor light.
Couple things along those lines, just to add some details from my experience with, so I don't know very much about light, but I do know a fair bit about light bulbs, because we established this very early on. I'm a big fan of smart IKEA lights, almost nuts about them. And I've had to experiment with lights a fair bit for the YouTube setup when I was recording a lot of YouTube videos. So LED lights that are designed to make white light, we don't as far as I understand it, don't have a white light LED exactly. It's more like RGB, you know, components that compose the white light. And one of the problems, especially with cheaper LEDs, is that they create white in the sense that you see it, and if you ask somebody, hey, what color is that, they'd say that's white, but it's not the right white. It's essentially it's composed of these three sharp spikes of color. It has this big spike of red, the spike of blue, and spike of green at these very particular frequencies. So when you sum them together, it makes white, but you're missing all of the other frequencies that, you know, fill in the spectrum from the red to the blue to the green and whatnot. And if you have an incandescent bulb, which are in the US, I think they're just straight up illegal because they aren't as power efficient, but an incandescent it uses black body radiation. At least I think that's what it's called, where you heat a filament and it's just heat, like, you know, the atoms are bouncing around. And so it sends off photons of an entire spectrum, depending on how hot it is. You know, as you heat something, it gets kind of reddish and then whiter and whiter as it starts to excite higher frequency light. But that is composing, you know, that is white light with all of the frequencies in between, you know, all the little ones. So it's a very natural white light, you know, similar to the sun, which is very much at this perfect spectrum of light, as opposed to an LED, which is creating this sort of representation of it. Similar to a computer screen. If you turn your computer screen to full white, it's just lighting up three pixels that are showing these very specific three frequencies of light. You aren't getting all the frequencies in between. So even though the light itself looks okay, you kind of lose a lot of color in what it reflects off of. You know, if something isn't really lining up with those three bands of frequency, you know, if something is pinkish, let's say, it's pink because it reflects a certain wavelength of light. And if you're hitting it with one of these LED bulbs that only have these three particular frequencies, it may be that pink thing is trying to reflect a wavelength of light that it's not getting. So it doesn't really look pink. It looks kind of reddish or just kind of grayish. It doesn't really look right. So a lot of the newer LEDs are much better, but it's worth kind of looking into if you're going to be putting lights in your house to try to get a full spectrum LED that actually does a better job. It's not perfect, but it does a better job of trying to cover all those frequencies so that you get much more natural colors. And it's a weird thing, because if you don't know that, you have these lights and you're like, I don't know what it is, but it just feels kind of sickly a little bit, and you don't know why. The other thing too is that you talk about a skylight and how, you know, beautiful the light is coming through a skylight. If you think about the skylight itself, you know, you're getting, like you said, it's complex what the sun is doing, because really it's a full spectrum light. It's reflecting off of all kinds of things. It's coming through the skylight. So you're getting different, you know, wavelengths of light coming in at different angles. And it's very, there's a lot about that, but you can get a reasonable approximation with just a big flat diffused panel of LEDs. And actually, I use this as my key light for recording. I don't know if I can put it or not. But this will, like, blow out the camera. But this, it's pretty good. I mean, I'm not saying it's the same as a skylight, but if you have this up against the wall, if you're not really thinking about it, it almost feels like there's a bright window there. And these are from IKEA. They sell bigger ones and whatnot. But it gives you this nice diffused set of light. And I think this is really key. You said this, but the color temperature of the sun changes over time. Like, there is a chronologic component to it, where it's very warm in the morning, it's much cooler at midday, you have that coldish, bright, bluish light, and in the evening it gets warmer again. And we are wired for that. I mean, if you listen to Andrew Huberman talk for more than 10 minutes, he will tell you about how important it is, in his estimation, to be exposed to warm light at a low solar angle in the morning and whatnot. But that is such an important part of our chronology. In my opinion, artificial lights are a massive failure if they don't emulate that. So I'm nuts about smart lights for that reason, in that you can program in the chronologic component and have them be warm when they're supposed to be warm, and you can control the brightness, have them be bluish when they're supposed to be, and then go back to warm in the evening. And I think that's fundamental to good lighting. So
just the amount of artificial lighting that you run into every day is crazy. I mean, you don't really think about it, but like on my way home, it's dark outside, like it's black. And then you have all these street lights and traffic lights and car lights, and they're all different temperatures all over the place. None of them look good or inviting. There's just this weird alien lights everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's doing to my brain, but it's it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And then I walk through my house and each room is lit a little bit differently, and everything's strange. And it's got to be affecting me somehow. I mean, I can tell when it feels good, but I don't really think much about it when it feels weird. And I don't think we're trying to answer a question of like, what is the perfect lighting for your office or your bedroom? It's just sort of, I don't know, what kind of effect does it have on you? And is that good or bad?
I think the effect is pretty profound, especially when you consider how much control you have over your artificial lighting. You know, it'd be cool if you could just punch a hole in the wall and have a giant window in all the rooms and get tons of natural light, but that's not easy to do. But you do have a lot of control over natural light, and it's not that expensive, and you can make some pretty massive improvements. Like I said, the difference between these two stores, the main difference was the lighting. And the effect it creates is dramatic. And this other store, if they had just, I mean, the I can't imagine the cost. Maybe this custom tacky neon sign was expensive, but everything else, it was almost like the same lights. It looked like the same roof rack. It was just placed better and dialed in better. And the bulbs were different and better. In fact, it's this cheaper store. I forgot to mention this, but they apparently, or looked like some of the bulbs had burned out, and so they replaced them. And so you would have this rack of lights where there's, you know, out of the six, there's four that are super cold, and then, you know, 6,000 Kelvin, and then two that are super warm. They're probably 2,000 Kelvin. So it's this awful mismatch side by side of really cold blue and then really warm. And you're like, this is a weird and kind of gross feeling. They just didn't think about it. They just bought some bulbs. Hey, these fit, and they put them in, and then nobody's really paying attention. The point being, I think that there's so much you can get in terms of environmental improvement by improving your interior lights. And I think it's worth doing.
Yeah, you can make a space feel good versus awkward and strange.
I mean, your office right now, to me, looks very nice. You have a very nice set of lights and lighting in there, but I know that you worked at that, and we did that for the podcast in order to create, you know, this image of a nice environment. Just do that everywhere.
I worked really hard coming up with this lighting arrangement in my room. Me and Dad worked to like put in different lighting tracks and everything, but my house is from the 70s, and we had these aluminum connector things. We had to replace those with something else, and whatever. The wiring's really old and not up to date, and so occasionally my lights will just start flashing. And the middle light, the big light, is, you know, you can change the color temperature and change all these different settings. Well, when the lights start flashing, it changes temperatures and brightness, and it's like a nightclub in here, and it makes me almost have a seizure every time. So,
I think it looks interrupted our last podcast. It's freaky. So, all right, that's enough about lights. What else, at least in brief, do you think accounts for what makes a physical space feel good? We talked about the people you're around, you know, that environment in terms of what people are thinking and working on. We talked probably too much about lighting and hopefully how to improve that. What else do you think goes into a physical space?
Cleanliness, I think, is something that people overlook. I didn't think about this much until I got fish. I used to have a little aquarium and put a lot of fish in there. And if their tank would get messy, they would get stressed. And you watch them and you think, oh God, it doesn't just happen to people. It happens to other animals. Why is that? why do we get stressed when things are messy? And I think one of the main reasons why that is because our brains are constantly having to identify things and register them as threats, non-threats, rewards. Is this food? Is this not food? What is this? It's constantly doing that in the back of your mind. Every time you walk in a room, you have to read the whole space. When you're driving, you're constantly, you're not even thinking about it, but you know, this car is not a threat. This car is going away from me. Oh, this car is turning a little bit this way. Its trajectory might hit me. And then you start paying attention to it, but you're constantly analyzing the scene in front of you. And yeah. If you walk into a messy house like my own right now, if it's not in a proper place, if it's out of place, your brain tags it. It says, what is this? Is it a threat? Is it a reward? Is it something good? Is it something bad? What is it? Is it an animal? No, it's just a hoodie, but you had to think about it. And if the house or the room is completely clean and completely in order, you can look at that and instantly know everything's in its place. Nothing's a threat. It's all safe here. And you can read and understand the space that you're in, which is also what you need to do. Just like the floor plane, the wall yeah. planes, the ceiling, everything, the whole read of the space is something your brain has to do every time it enters into a new surrounding. So having a messy place, and when I say messy, you can think of some people who, you know, the real creative type or the cliche, they have this super messy room, things are everywhere, books stacked up and down, and there's papers everywhere, but they love it and they feel right at home. And I wouldn't even consider, I mean, yeah, from the outside world, it might be messy, but to them, they know the place of all of those objects. So to them, in yeah. some way, it is clean because it's everything is in its place. Nothing's out of place. If you took all that stuff and threw it around their room and put it all out of order, then they would be stressed because now they have to reanalyze everything. They have to refigure everything out. Nothing is in the place that they had before. So it's not a typical clean or not clean or whatever. It's what you know and can recognize. And if you have a messy room or office or studio or whatever, where things are not where they should be, are not put away correctly, or it's cluttered and you can't read the room and you can't understand where things are, it's stressful and you don't want that. So cleanliness and orderliness, I will preach it now, but I need to spend some time cleaning my own office. And it's stressing me out right now. Like my office is cluttered and messy and I need to clean it. And it's stressful and it affects the way I do things. It affects my ability to focus on certain things and relax in a place that should be very relaxing and conducive to what I want to do.
That's really interesting. I've thought, of course, about cleanliness and how I really like a clean space, but I never really tied it together in terms of that cognitive load aspect. I've always felt a little bit kind of like, I don't really get why. I'm not going to think about it too much. But I like that explanation a lot, that it is creating this subconscious burden on your mind.
I mean, even like a tiny little thing on the floor, a little clump of hair or fuzz or laundry something, your brain has to figure out, is that a cockroach or a spider or a scorpion? Yeah. Or is that some sort of threat to me? Or is it just fuzz? And you yeah. have to figure that out.
Well, two things. One, I have noticed how much my cat and dog, but more the cat, loves clean things. If you clean something, she's just all about it. You vacuum the rug and she's like rolling around on it. Like, this is the best thing ever. And she just seems to really like clean stuff. And even the dog, who dogs are not known for their cleanliness, but even so, you wash his sheets and he has like three blankets that he sleeps with. Because he's that spoiled, but you wash them and fold them up and he just loves it. He's rolling around in it. The other thing is that I've managed to keep the light cone of the camera here relatively clean. Too. And even that has started to become cluttered. Like, I don't know what that thing is. I don't know what this cable is for. I don't know what that is either. Just they're starting to be junk, and that's in this safe square of the podcast cone. I don't even want to think about the rest of this. So Which is great, because that is an actionable item. I could clean this stuff and theoretically feel better in this space, which is great. I'm going to do that.
I think the amount of things that affect you in the environment are completely infinite. And we did a really bad job of narrowing down specific categories and being able to simplify things. But let's try, I guess, a little bit to name some of the main factors. One is people. When you're in a place like a college campus or a bookstore or whatever, you have a way of sort of, your brain can read all of them and register them as non-threatening. You can walk into a coffee shop, really. I mean, yes, in theory, are you ever safe around humans? But in a coffee shop, you can sort of settle down and relax and think, they're all here for coffee, I'm good. If someone comes in with a gun, you reassess the situation. But for the most part, you can read all of those people as one thing, no threat. At a campus, same thing. They're all students. They're all safe, in theory. And anywhere you go like that, you can do that. If you go into a back alley of New York City or something, you can't do that. That's an unsettling place to be. There are all kinds of crazy people out there. So going to safe places or whatever, the people make a big difference on how you feel. In fact, that's what anxiety is most of the time. So you can't let that go. You constantly reassess people. So people is one category, just the environment, the atmosphere of people.
Okay. And then there's one section of it. There's the other section, I would say, of like the physical attributes of that space. And we went through two of them. One is the lighting, of creating this natural feeling lighting. And of course, that's different depending on what the space is designed for. You know, a bar is lit very different than, you know, a coffee shop and whatnot. But we'll set that aside because we talked about lighting more than enough. So lighting, creating that environment, natural environment. The cleanliness, that feeling of, or removing the cognitive load of your brain kind of processing things, being out of place. And there's just something that is not aesthetic about it. You know, things aren't where they should be. They're overlapping and obscured and cluttered, and it just doesn't feel good to you in the same way that something beautiful and well-formed does feel good to you. A couple other things I can think of off the top of my head that fit that category of the attributes of the physical space. One would be life, in terms of plant life in particular, but even pets and, you know, other living things. I think we have a pretty strong reaction to nature and, you know, health and living things. And there's a reason why a lot of places you go, coffee shops or what have you, have tons of plants. And it's because it creates that feeling of, oh, this place is alive. The plants are not dead. They're not poisoned. And so there is some psychological component to that. And that's very well studied and well proven. So it's hardly speculation. Plants, I have it on my to-do list of getting more. I have discovered that the this kind of plant, the stuck in my headphones. You know, this one, the one that's like everywhere. I think it's called Golden Pothos or something. I think it's invasive. Like, it's not supposed to be here, and you can't kill it, which is awesome for like office purposes and for me, because it's just almost an unkillable plant. So I've been having very good success with this, and I recommend it. But more plants, I think that's very helpful too.
Smells. I don't actually think about this one much, but I think it plays a big part in our environment. Every place has a different smell. I bet you the smell of the coffee shop when you walk in there every morning, although, are you back on coffee yet?
I'm still kind of doing a little, taking some days of no caffeine, a little bit back and forth. I'm in a coffee shop every day. Like, if I'm not drinking coffee, I'm drinking decaf.
All right, we're not talking about coffee again. When you walk in the coffee shop, The smell of the coffee, I bet, kicks you right into this is morning routine time. Yeah. And for me, when I wake up and I smell the coffee, it's time to wake up. Mm-hmm. When I get to work, there's a specific smell of the office. I don't really know how to describe it, but I don't know. It just makes you feel, oh, I'm back at work. I don't know how much it actually affects me, but yeah. It's definitely there. Walking outside, I mean, the air quality changes the way you feel. The difference mm-hmm. between winter and summer and the humidity and all of that stuff plays a big part. I mean, I notice a big, like, emotional difference between disgustingly hot and sweaty, humid Florida and then wintertime where it just, like, I feel happy again.
Quick pro tip on the smells. I live in a house it's in a very damp environment. It's an old house. We have multiple pets. So it's a bit of a challenge to make the house smell good. And I came back from a trip and walked in the house and was like, oh no, it smells bad. Then I had this realization of, oh no, it's always smelled bad. And I only noticed because I've been gone. So I got like probably 15 at least different little tray things and filled them with baking soda and hid them throughout the house. There's multiple ones in each room. And that really seemed to help quite a bit. I mean, I did some cleaning and made sure to wash some stuff and whatever, but I'd done that before. It didn't help all that much, but all the hidden baking soda, it really did seem to make a difference. It smelt a lot better. And then you can kind of, you know, try to remove the funky smells. And if you want to add good smells, make sure you're not just doing that on top of crappy smells, I think. Like, fresh coffee is awesome and, you know, fragrant things, cool, but get rid of the weirdness first.
Okay, so what are our action items? What do you do? I'm sure there's more things, but we're running out of time.
Okay, so first, I think it is worth really prioritizing good environments, especially you can't control too much about where you work and whatnot, but, you know, in terms of third place, or if you have a chance to go somewhere and do work or do something, do journaling, I've just increasingly started to value a good environment. You know, the coffee shops, the outdoor spaces, anywhere that really feels good to me, I really like them and I'll go there. So I think it's worth making a little bit of extra effort just to be in good environments, because it makes such a difference. It can change the shape of my entire day. I think that's worth doing. For most of us, maybe not quite all of us, but for most of us, it's winter time now, which means a lot less time outside and probably just less time going places in general. So you're in your own house quite a bit. And after this podcast, I am going to make a priority of this, but I want to see what I can do to improve my own physical space. The cleanliness, we already said, it's not great. So that needs to be dealt with. I would like to get some more plant life in here. I might even take another pass at the lighting, trying to get that a little bit brighter and better. But I think it's worth investing time into your own physical space. To me, we've laid this out before without launching into this whole thing, but there's kind of this hierarchy of things, classes of things that you can do to try and make yourself better. You know, you can try and always use your willpower to make better choices, which is the hardest and least sustainable way of doing things. You can try and exert, you know, some willpower at singular moments in ways that affect you over the long term. And those are so much, like, if there are any of those available to you, that is what you want to do. Because it's like the effort level is just orders of magnitude smaller for the benefit you get. So changing your environment is one of those. Anything you can do to change your environment requires usually some work up front, some decision making or thinking, but then it's just there. And that environment, if it's better, it's making you better from then on. And that's such a valuable thing that you should just do anything like that. Anything that, anywhere you find that opportunity, just do it, because the value is so high. So even if it's super simple, like just buying a plant for your desk, if it gives you even the slightest bit of psychological comfort, it's worth doing. Just do it. because that, as long as you don't kill the plant, will last for years. And that little tiny bit of psychological comfort added up over the course of years is quite a lot.
So go to good places and make your... Go to good places and...
Go to good places
and go to good places and make the places you go good. Yes. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. We got it out.
All right. Can we please end this?
Yes. Yes. All right. Goodbye, everybody.